Not just from the point that you don't know this or understand, but I think in practical application, all of us have been doing this for years. You know, I really appreciate as I see Mr. Sieber give the prayer to see people that have been around for a long time that are still practicing this. I don't think we look at it as just a place to go or something just to do to fill our time. I think really with God's Spirit, we're looking to the depth of what God is trying to say. And I think as we see and watch what's happening and watching in the world events, the world continues to go down. And sometimes as we watch it go down, if we're not careful, sometimes we can tend to go down with it. In different ways, I'll try to bring up examples. We've got to try to shoot the bar the other way. This is what we've tried to do in camp programs such as Raise the Bar, as one of our themes was one year. We keep trying to teach our youth to set their bar high because the standard of this world is going down. Once again, I don't want to take that for granted because we're watching it. We're practicing it. Sometimes you might find yourselves again get a little bit frustrated because we end up falling into that trap. Even when it comes to the smallest things that we understand and we know, such as Sabbath observance or something to that effect, or even in fact I brought up this morning, going to a Mexican restaurant, say, we understand about God's laws. You know about unclean and clean and unclean food. And many of us know sometimes when you order those beans, you don't know what's in the beans, do you? But is there anything wrong, especially with today's health concerns? You know, more than God's people will ask about ingredients that are in certain products or at restaurants. There's nothing wrong at all with asking, well, by the way, do you have any lard that you make your beans with, or is it made with vegetable oil? That's kind of a typical type question that many will ask. Well, some might just go, well, I don't think I'm going to bother them. And my question would be, well, why not? If God says, don't eat pork, I don't want to eat pork. I would like to do my best to ask about it and not get so nonchalant that we're not bothering anybody. I think if you're paying for it, bother them. Find out what you're eating. And by the way, it goes beyond just lard and other things as well. I think we're really looking, still searching and practicing, trying to find out the best things and those lost things from long ago as far as herbs and other things. I know there's a lot of different things and it can be kind of a headache, but what I'll tell you is don't ever stop. No, don't get to that point where you just don't care anymore. I hear a little feedback going on here. I don't know if that's me or what. There we go. So let's continue to go through the scriptures from the point that we're going to continue to be teaching God's way and God's law. And as we see lawlessness abound today, as we see the world constantly decay, and really, frankly, it doesn't seem like many people care. You know, as we watch the news programs and I watch people break down windows and break down shops and break into shops, and I see the police that just stand and watch. People are mad. Let's just let them get away with it. And I know there's some that are prosecuted, so it's not just a blanket statement, but it does seem like from our very top down that there's this lawlessness and nobody ever gets judged. There's no judgment that's imparted. Frankly, if there was, probably a lot of high-ups would probably be in prison right now, and I think we all know that. We're practicing. We're learning to function and understand God's law. Because most of the people today would think that God's law would be done away with. Again, I think that's a practical understanding that we have. But when we go to Matthew chapter 5, let's go back here again just to do a quick review. Matthew chapter 5, Christ came on the scene himself who gave Moses the law. It's called the law of Moses. As we became acquainted with it, maybe when we were children, we were taught the Ten Commandments. Many of us thought, well, that's the law. You heard about Moses going up to Mount Sinai and getting the law. And in the movie, he came down with two tablets, didn't he? As the old saying goes, take two tablets and you'll be okay, especially those. But you know, you saw him come down with 10 tablets, that's it. And yet he was up there for 40 days and 40 nights and you really didn't give it any other thought. It's either that God was either a very slow writer Or it was like Moses was in some kind of dentist or doctor's office, and he gets there because God's so important. He was just going, well, take a seat. He'll be here. He'll be here soon. You know, soon to God could be 30 days. Who knows? I don't think that's the way it was. I think that obviously as we continued to research and search and look at God's word, there was much more to God's law than just Ten Commandments. When he came to the people of God in the New Testament, again, when he brought this up, that you know that there were problems with the law. There was two problems. There was lawlessness that was taking place, and there was also this meticulousness of the Pharisaical law that was taking place. There was probably a lot of confusion that was taking place at that time. Christ himself made the statement in Matthew 5, verse 17, "Do not think that I have come to destroy the law or the prophets. I have not come to destroy, but to fulfill." You could say that that would be more of a statement maybe for us now than it would even be for them. They were still listening to the law and the prophets in the synagogues on the Sabbath day, as Christ says, all that they say, do, but don't copy what they do as well. Listen to what the law and the prophets say. He said, I didn't come away to destroy that, but to fulfill. So man's reasoning throughout the years was what God would say, don't swear. Man's reasoning would say, again, even singing the songs like, will I swear? Do you swear to tell the whole truth? And then he gave examples such as we see. Let's go over to Matthew 5, verse 33. Here he says, again, you have heard it's been said by them of old time, you shall not forswear yourselves, in other words, commit perjury, but shall perform to the Lord your oaths. Most of us have watched this. If you've seen any of the congressional hearings, I remember watching some of those, and then later on you find out these people lied. No, we call it, the English language puts it this way, they lied through their, what you would say, they lied through their teeth, and nothing seems to be done. So there's so much perjury taking place today that you're going to find, again, if we're not careful, God's people can start swinging down with it as well. Let's read through and see what he says. He says, I say to you, swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it's God's throne. So if he said this, I would gander that this was probably taking place at that time. They would grab this. They would see this was probably taking place, and people were saying this. Don't swear by the earth, for it's his footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it's the city of the great king. Neither shall you swear by your head. You cannot make one hair white or black, but you let your communication be yes, yes, no, no, for whatever is more than these is of evil. It's of failure duty. It's morally wrong. It goes beyond what God specifically said what to do. Now, maybe you haven't heard some of these, but maybe have heard other things. As I maybe had pointed out, have you ever heard, maybe seen in movies, I swear by what? My mother's grave? You've heard that one. So you've seen other things pointed out that people will do that. When I was a kid growing up, do you swear on a stack of Bibles? How would you deal with that now? Here's the point here. These may be light sayings, but they're really not, because they come at opportune times that we maybe could teach our children something about this. See, I can't say I was taught about this. You know, because they would, well, it's just something that they say, so it's no big deal. To God, it is a big deal. If he says, let your yes be yes and your no be no, then he wants to practice this, for us to be actually a part of this. That you'll simply say, wouldn't it be funny that you just actually say yes? And somebody go, well, do you really mean that? I just said yes. If I say yes, I really mean that. If I say no, that's what I mean. But nowadays, it becomes more than this. So people will interject things like, let me be honest with you. And when you think about it, it might be kind of a funny saying. But I would think, you know, if God is saying this, then I don't want it to be a part of my vocabulary. So I learned as I was reading through when I was young, I wouldn't swear on a stack of Bibles anymore. And if my children did it, I would use it as a teaching tool. I would say, hey, come back to the scriptures and let's show what this says. Because God says, let your yes be. So don't get caught up with that stuff. just always be honest. What a great teaching tool for our children or for our grandchildren. And this is the point. You may have read this before, you may have read it, and you may see it. We're going to have to be teaching this because, let me be honest with you. Now, I don't want to say that. In the future, we're going to have to be teaching people this. They're going to have picked up these traditions. And it's going to be a simplicity for us because we're practicing it. So it's more than just knowing this. It's being able to be teachers of what God says. So when I hear that, I pick it up really quick. And I'll respond to somebody with that. Just maybe in a light way. If somebody says to me, well, let me be honest with you. I might say, does that mean you're not being honest with me the rest of the times? And they may laugh or whatever. Well, hey, I'm just wondering, are you an honest person? Are you telling me the truth here? Why do they preface it with that? It seems like just saying no or yes doesn't seem to be enough anymore. You don't need to turn here, but James 5, verse 12, James said the same thing. Above all, my brethren, swear not, neither by heaven, neither by earth, neither by any other oath, but let your yes be yes, and your no be no, lest you fall into deceitfulness. What's the real problem with swearing or making, especially with making an oath? Why did God say, don't do that? You might know the answer, you may not. Why did God say for a human being not to make an oath or not to swear? There are others that have done that. Of itself, if it's fulfilled, it really wouldn't be wrong. No, God can swear. God makes oaths. Ah, there's a difference there, isn't it? God will fulfill his oath. There is no guarantee that you will fulfill yours. You might say, I'm going to lay an oath down and then drop dead. It's possible, isn't it? So he said, don't do something that you cannot promise to keep. Therefore, if you come before a judge, you don't have to say, I swear. I remember, again, being young, I was in some kind of court system. I don't know, except I wasn't in trouble. I can't remember what it was, but I had to do the oath or something. And I told them, because I just had learned this, I told them, I can't swear. Can I do something else? And at that time, it was just coming in because more and more people were looking at this and say, I'm not allowed to swear. So they would say, do you affirm? Now most days they'll say, do you affirm? And that's fine to say, what I'm saying is I'll try to the best of my ability to tell you what the truth is. But even then, you almost couldn't guarantee it, could you? What if you told the judge something and say this and this and this, and then later on after that, somebody came up to you and says, by the way, don't you remember that happened and you did this? And I go, I totally forgot about that, and it changed the whole story. Did that make you a liar? No. You certainly didn't have the intent to lie, but you just forgot another element of that. So the whole point is we're looking at within God's law, we're looking at the spiritual intent. We know that the law is there. Now we're looking at the whys. Why is it there? Because all of God's law is there for freedom, to help people to be happy. They think it's the opposite. And you know the ironic thing about it? The church bought this. Most of the church bought the lie that it was the opposite, that there was oppression, that there were all these rules. And by the way, the sad part about it, sometimes there were some of these meticulous rules that were out there that got very fine. I know there were some measurements for those that were around in the church. A girl's skirt had to be so long. We still teach modesty, but we hope that they can come to that conclusion without some deacon coming along, which that was never supposed to be there anyway, to do measurements. But that's what happened. There was a process where God's people learned and hopefully matured in this process. So we're getting the intent better, that we didn't do away with the modesty, but we didn't keep some of the Pharisaical rules that were there. We had to learn and grow through that too. I'm very grateful for that. Some of that was very difficult. A lot of people left because they would say things like, well, My kids can't play basketball. They can't do something. They can't play basketball. They can't do this. And when I hear can't, I'm thinking, why don't we teach the other way? What can you do on the Sabbath day? Is there anything wrong, for instance? Why would they think, well, you know, here's the seventh day, and it's so laborious to come before God and to worship Him on the Sabbath day. We should be going, there's got to be something wrong up in that. There must be something wrong that we're teaching as parents, to not teach our children this is a God to be worshiped. That when you go outside, that when you breathe that air, when you eat that food, all the glory goes to God that gives you everything that you've got. And the teaching would be there. Then you'd think that there would be a little bit more appreciation. And teaching God's way and the practical applications and spiritual intents of God's law. From those smallest things that I learned as a child to turn away from. The way that we speak, the way that we talk, the way that we say things. And you look at what God's law says, it doesn't make you any better per se. But it makes you, again, part of a practical application of a Christian on the spiritual intent. Okay, continuing on to Matthew 5, a very important chapter for that purpose. In verse 18, he said, "For assuredly I say to you, until heaven and earth pass away or perish, this will take place." If you look at the book of Revelation, we won't go there, but there will come a time where the physical elements, that's a whole other story on how what's going to take place and how that's going to happen. But it says, neither one jot nor one tittle will by any means pass away or perish from the law until it's all fulfilled. Now, when I look around, I know it gets hot out there sometimes, but not enough to burn the heavens and the earth up yet. That's not taking place. We know that. When heaven and earth pass away, according to the scripture, there will be no more physical life. You can read about that back in the end of the book of Revelation, another topic for the future. That time will come. And when I thought about that, I think about other things too. I was thinking about walking along the beach. You know, some will be going to, some really like the ocean or some really like the mountains. Some of you have been both places as I have. I think there are wonderful things about both of those. Taking a walk through my grandfather's 40 acres, it was just gorgeous. Or walking along the beach. And if you're walking along the beach and what if it was just a really beautiful, have you ever been to a real beautiful beach? I've been on some where there was a lot of stuff that washed up and it was kind of stinky. You know, still kind of a nice beach, but how about a real nice one? Just gorgeous. The tropics, it's a beautiful day. You're walking with your spouse or with your kids or by yourself and going, this is just millennial. This is just gorgeous. And when you're thinking about heaven and earth passing away, you're going, are we not going to have that anymore? And when I think about that, I go, well, whatever it is, it's going to be better. Whatever takes place when God restores all this, it's going to be so much better than we could ever have. Yes, if you can think that, think of heights even higher than that. It's going to be so gorgeous. We're learning right now, again, there will be law as well. There will always be law. There always has been law. Before mankind was created, there was law. There was an angelic rebellion because there was law at the time. God always has laws, and they're always for a good purpose. We've got to understand the intent. So when there's no physical life left, many of the laws of the Bible will be irrelevant simply because they apply to physical life. But there will still be spiritual applications. So Jesus was saying that as long as there are human beings on earth, that his Father's laws stand as written immutable. Now he gives some examples. The great part about this, says it, then gives examples. He says in verse 19, therefore, whoever breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches men so will be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. That's a pretty strong indictment on those that did that, aren't they? The ones that said, by the way, you don't have to do that anymore. They're done away with. There are actually many of the brethren that we knew that quickly bolted out, were eating leavening on the days of unleavened bread, were eating pork, whatever it was. All of a sudden there was freedom. Their look at it was freedom to eat whatever they wanted now. Total ignorance of God's laws. And they bought it. There were people, there were teachers that taught it. Here it says, whoever breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches men so. I don't think I want to teach men to go, you know, tell you what, it's a Sabbath. You don't feel like coming. Stay home. No, you got to rest now and then, take a break. I don't think that's what God's laws, it's not what his law teaches. And everybody knows this. God's law says, you know, it says, the commandment says, keep the Sabbath day holy. But then there are other places that you go into that talk about keeping the Sabbath day. It's a holy convocation. It's all a part of that law. I don't want to teach the least of that. It says, go up to the feast where God chooses to place his name. There's a judgment within that. So part of God's law is, of course, that's a statute. We see the commandments, but the holy days are called statutes. So we know that there's more to God's law than just commandments. God says, go up to the holy days. We question, well, where do we go? He says, where to choose to place his name. Now, a judgment is made in the church on where to go. We pray to God, ask him to show us. He guides us in going to the feast there. Now, we could say, you know, I don't think I'm going to go this year. I had a man actually say one time, and he had severe health problems. He had dialysis. And I'm thinking, I always want to be going to the feast. I don't want to judge anybody, but I know I don't care if I was, this is the way I feel. If I'm really sick, I would rather be sick at God's feast than be sick at home. Well, you've got your comfort at home. I don't want to be where God's people are not. I don't want to be where God does not choose to place his name. So if I'm sick, I'd rather be at the feast and honoring God in that way. So I asked the person, he was on dialysis. I go, well, doesn't the place down there have dialysis? He goes, I never looked into it. He did. It was down there. He went to the feast. Continued. So if God says that, I don't want to lighten it up and make it, well, yeah, maybe you aren't feeling well. Go ahead and stay home. I'm not going to teach that. Now, it's everyone's choice, but I see what God teaches in his law, and he honors. You saw the person right here that said, I can't work on the Sabbath day. Many of God's people over here have gone through that. Sometimes it's much more difficult. I have a lot of respect for that woman whose husband died and she's still farming. I think there would be a lot of faith in God and trust that God will take care of her and provide her. But you got to be a little bit rough and be strong, don't you, when it comes to obeying God's laws. He said, I will take care of you. So we learn that as a part of the process, but I'm not going to dote on people and go, well, you know, you're not feeling good, stay back. Now, always say, this is what God says, he will always take care of you, but follow through with what he says to do. Understand that this, we're not dealing with just some other human being here. We're dealing with the great God of the universe that knows every hair on your head and respects when people respect him and worship him. So Christ said first that it was necessary to keep the law. And then to go beyond the righteousness, we'll see the scribes and the Pharisees. Verse 20 of Matthew 5, for I say to you, unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees, you'll by no means enter the kingdom of heaven. And you really have to understand that one, don't you? Especially back then, if you saw the meticulousness of what they did, talk about measuring and tapes and all that. They took the cake on this stuff because they went way beyond what God intended. But that's where they were. You had to understand, wow, if you really took that physically, you'll go, then I'm not going to make this because the detail that they go through, I'm going to have to scrub the skin off my arms because they do it to clean so much beyond what God intended. This was a very peculiar statement since the scribes and the Pharisees prided themselves in their very strict and meticulous observance of the law, especially the ones that they came up with. What Jesus Christ was doing is making the point that something is required beyond what they did. And then he began to explain, this is the greatest part, right within here, he's going to go, now let me give you a few examples. Verse 21, You've heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not murder. He quoted this out of Exodus 20, verse 13, one of the codified Ten Commandments. He says, you've heard it was said to the old, you shall not murder. But he said, and whoever murders will be in danger and judgment. Now in verse 2, now he's going after spiritual intent. I say to you that whoever is angry with his brother without a cause is in danger of judgment. Who does verse 22 remind you of? Think of an example yourselves. Now what I'll say to you, God's got laws, statutes, judgments, and testimonies. The testimonies are, here's what I mean by this. He's giving you, here's what I mean by this, but now there's even another example that maybe you can think of because you've studied God's word. Who put themselves in this position? Whoever is angry with his brother, give you a hint, go back to Genesis. Go back to early Genesis. Early Genesis. Like the first two kids. Who became angry with his brother without cause? Abel did nothing wrong. Prime testimony, isn't it? And God warned him. He warned, he gave the prime example. This is what happens when you get angry without cause. It starts to fester. And I know some of us, practical applications. You'll get angry, and you're just taking time off your lives. You're only hurting yourselves. You get angry because you choose to get angry. We all do. Why would I get angry about this? Some of us are even saying, I can't watch the news. Why am I getting angry? We'll choose not to get angry. Look at it this way. It's going to happen. It's got to happen. Christ said it was going to happen. Right now, we can't do anything about it. In fact, you can turn the tables on it. Can't wait till it's our turn. Can't wait till we can help God set it right. Wow, look at this. It's happening right before our very eyes. Now, I'm not going to be saying you got to whistle Dixie over it when something goes that bad, but you don't have to get in a part where it just makes your whole day miserable. We're getting practice, aren't we? We're getting real practical practice with this. It says here, whoever says to his brother, Raca, worthless one, is a term of utter vilification. Ha, we're getting practice with that one. How many of you have looked at some of the TV programs and the news programs and have said, worthless one? Gets dangerous. It gets to our mind, we start to look at everybody else's faults. I'm not saying we can't judge and say that's wrong, say that's not true. But see, the sentencing is left to God. He'll take care of these people. They're not getting away with anything. God knows that. We're watching the process and practicing practical applications. Here it says, now whoever says you fool, from the Greek word moros, M-O-R-O-S, probably where we get the term what? Moron. How many have said that? How many have called certain leaders? Well, this guy is a moron. That's just the way he is. And God is looking down from his throne and go, oh, so you think you got it all right, huh? I'm going to show you a few things then, if you're going to call someone else this. Did you ever hear Christ call someone a moron? Do you think that's what he would do? Now, he called the Pharisees hypocrites. That's what they truly were, and he saw them in the process. But this was the Creator as well. I would walk very carefully when we start to pan out names. We're getting practical application, aren't we? Maybe some of you have caught yourself in the very act. Yeah, I've slipped up. I've gotten angry enough, or that's what I've done. I'm telling you, this is what the Word of God says in practicing this. Verse 23 now. Let's look at another example. Therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar, and therefore, that your brother has something against you. Verse 23 added something that Matthew 18 does not have, and therefore God's people thought they could slide through on a loophole. I've seen it. See, I've seen God's people try to avoid Matthew 18. It's hard. I don't feel like it. I know I've heard all the excuses. I've had my own. We've all had practical applications. But now instead of something that you've got against somebody, it's wait, before you can offer a gift to God, he says if somebody has something against you, you've got to go take care of it. So don't offer me any offerings. Don't say, God, I love you. Here, I'm giving you an offering when you haven't fixed a problem that deals with God's supreme law of love. You can profess it all day, but if you're going to make excuses, he says, don't be offering me any offerings. If you want to show you love me, show me that you love your neighbor. And let me say this, sometimes it won't work out. It doesn't say that here, but you know from the rest of God's word and understanding, you can't change somebody. If you pray about it and do the best that you can and the person still wishes to bear a grudge against you, you've done your part. You can come before God and say, God, you know I've done my best. There's no problem there. But it says, leave your gift before the altar, go your way, be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift. So do your best to do that. So again, what Christ was saying, it was necessary to go beyond the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees and then explain to precede the question of just what does that mean. So what we're reading in Matthew 5 is not doing away with the law, not an easing of the law, but an amplification or a magnification. There's two parts there. It's in the hearing part. I know some people have got some practical application with this because we've got some hearing aids out there. The ears aren't working all that good, or the peepers are getting a little bit weaker. I know that sometimes I've got to use a magnifying glass now to see that real small print. You know what that magnifying glass does? Ah, I can actually read it now. I can actually see what it says. Ah, with the hearing aids, I can really actually hear him. Never could hear him before. Now I can hear. Amplification, magnification. Christ said, here's the law. Other people can't see it. In fact, we've seen it in our own age, in our own generation, that people lost the vision and lost the hearing. Somebody told them something different and they bought it. Notice again, as we look to some examples here, he gave examples. Verse 21, you've heard it was said to those of old, you shall not murder. And then he amplifies it, magnifies it in verse 22 through verse 26. I won't go through them, but just to show that there are specific examples here. Verse 27, he says, you've heard it was said to those of old, you shall not commit adultery. Verse 28 to 32, what's he do? He amplifies, he goes, but and this is what I'm saying that it's saying. There's nothing to do with, and by the way, I'm easing this. It's okay to gander and okay to look now and then. No, it's not good to, what do you think about a testimony of that? Adultery, great testimony. Man after God's heart. He looked. The look took him away, didn't it? The look was the seed. The thought continued, and it turned into adultery. Nowadays, it's so dangerous because the look comes to your doorstep. The look comes to your computer screen. There it is, right in front of people. It used to be, I'd say, wow, as you go through some of the shopping, grocery markets, the men would go through checkout, and you'd have these magazines with the women that were scantily clad. Later on, I was grateful when they covered those magazines, but that's what you had. It's much worse than that now with the social media that's out there. The kids or someone else will be on their screen, pop, you'll get a pop-up. There it is. What you gonna do with that? It's dangerous. So he amplified this. He said, don't even go there with the look. It's wrong to lust. Verse 33, you have heard it was said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but perform your oaths to the Lord. And that's why later on he even said, don't even swear or give oaths at all, because it's such a dangerous thing. But if you're going to do that, then you better follow through with that. or you're putting yourselves into the violation of God's commandment. Verse 38, you have heard it said, this is a good one here, many will not understand this, to you and I it might be simple now. It wasn't before, because I remember those days. Wow, that was a pretty harsh thing to do, that if you took somebody's eye out, you would have to get your eye taken out. Did you ever think that? That's not the intent. These are called laws of restitution. So if it was an eye you took out, you'd come before judges, and they would deem the restitution on what you would have to pay to recompense taking somebody's eye out. The tooth for the tooth. It was the laws of restitution. It wasn't you go grab somebody else's eye out. That would be kind of weird, wouldn't it? But that's how people look upon how God's... Well, that's why that's all changed, they said. And they don't understand the spiritual intent. Verse 39 through 42 amplified and magnified that. Verse 43, you've heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. That came to be, never was the intent, nor was it written in God's commandments to hate your enemy. But later on was written that way, so he just quoted what was being said. But I'm telling you, verse 44 through 48, he amplified it and he magnified it. So Jesus Christ dealt with a commandment against murder, verse 21, commandment against adultery, verse 27, and verse 31, he dealt with a statute. You see, in verse 31, here's the statute. Furthermore, it's been said, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce, quoted from Deuteronomy 4:24, and then he amplified it. He always hated it, always will, always did. You know what seems to go together for those that have been around to have watched? You know, when the church went through a crisis, a huge one, when most of the people bought that God's laws were done away with, when you add up the chart of how many divorces took place from that point on, when I look back and see the people that I went to college with, not just saw that they left the church, but how many were divorced. Now, when I see somebody that's still married, and they might not even be in the church, I rejoice that they're still married. I go, wow, they stuck it out. They hung in there. Because you know that affects the children as well. This is what's happened. You toss out the law, it's a free-for-all. Who cares anymore? Who defines law? All the questions go up in the head. Who makes the rules? Once again, it becomes the sheriff of Nottingham. I'm the sheriff and I make the rules. No, God makes the rules, and he's got an intent here. In verse 33, Jesus referred to a statutory reference to swearing, and that comes from Leviticus 19 and Numbers 30. And then he amplified it in verses 34 through 37. In verse 38, there's a statutory reference to punishment. These are called statutes. These are found in Exodus 21, Leviticus 24, and Deuteronomy 19. So here's what happens here, what I just read to you. Jesus chose two commandments and three statutes to make a point. Why two and three? That makes five. Maybe so that we'll remember it. There's a program now called the Five. Now, when you see the five, maybe you will remember these. I don't know why he just did five. Sometimes he just chose particular ones. Maybe that was more taking place then that they would grab onto and understand because it was prevalent at that time. Possibly. Does it for a purpose and for a reason. But he does it to make a point. In these five cases, he says, it's been said thus and such. And then he says, but I'm saying to you, he didn't change it. We know that. He amplified it. He magnified it. It went beyond what they had been accustomed to because in their day and time, there was always some kind of physically being able to conform physically to it. And that's the problem in the modern day age of the church that we went through as well. As long as you just came to church, occupied a seat, you may be obeying the Sabbath day. As long as I just got there, as long as I just gave money, as long as I paid my tithe, right to that T, I was okay. As long as I gave my offering, then we see some other examples. by the way, don't bring your offering until you fix the problem with your brother. Don't bring the offering, and don't just bring an offering, he says, does he? And see, nobody else can do anything about that, because there's obviously a spiritual intent to the application of the law of offering and tithing when it comes to giving to God. Because when it comes to the offering, he says, you give as you're able. And when you give, by the way, he's just not looking for a number. He's not just looking for us to fill out an envelope. He wants to look here and see what's in your heart and how grateful and how thankful that you are that you're taking your next breaths and what you're able to be a part of. As we look through this world going down, don't you smile when you see what God has made you a part of? To what we have to look forward to? I could drop out here right now and take my last breath and be the happiest camper in the world. So what? I'm going to miss the rest of this? Really? Is that the happiness that we have? And yet God gives us happiness that we can still enjoy, physically look to things. But when you really capture the vision, you give up right now. Let it stop now. There's too much pain and too much suffering going on right now. All we want to be able to do is function and be able to get what God is trying to say to us, not just that you and I get it, but because we're going to be teachers as well. Let's turn back to a prophecy which spoke of what Christ would fulfill concerning the law about 700 years even before he was born, in Isaiah 42 and verse 21. Amazing that we were just looking at the fulfillment, or at least partial fulfillment, because when he returns, he will also exalt and magnify the law. But you guess who else will be exalting and magnifying the law? His first fruits. All that we've learned throughout life, there'll now be a practical application. And you know, we see it in our very own lives. I never thought I would see this, but I'm seeing it. As I gave the example as a preteen camp director, I can't believe how fast this time goes. And these preteens are now serving on staff. And our staff, and some of these you know, are functioning. Somebody just told me this morning, they go, the one that they saw growing up in the camps just recently gave a split sermon. And they've got families now. These were the young camper kids that are now becoming leaders. They've taken what's been taught in camp, in their churches, and then their homes, and they're now teaching other people. In fact, there have always been. You know what's humbling so many times about this is when somebody younger can come before somebody older and teach about God's way. It's very humbling because for some of you, I was still in diapers when you were working. You know, and yet we're teaching. But I'm only teaching what I was taught as well and passing that on as well. And we all do that. And we all get to be first fruits on teaching all this together. Isaiah 42, verse 21, the Lord is well pleased for his righteousness' sake. He will exalt or magnify the law and make it honorable. He'll advance the law. This exalt and magnify in the interpretation. He'll advance, he'll magnify, he'll bring it up, he'll increase. He'll promote it. Nothing to do with putting it away. So the Jews had placed a narrow interpretation on the law. They, when the law said you shall not murder, they figured as long as you didn't take a sword and chop somebody's head off, as long as you did not follow through with the actual physical act, that many other ideas were acceptable under their view of the law. Because how ironic that it was in Acts chapter 23, you don't have to turn there, you'll probably remember this, nearly 40 Jews bound themselves under a curse to not eat or drink until they had killed Paul. I'm thinking about this and just, how do you do that? And I've seen it in our modern day age and times. I've seen people in the church lie, cheat, steal, and go, how do you do that? How do you do that and come to church? Because they're not synonymous. What are you doing here? If that's what you believe and that's what you practice, we don't practice that here. We don't believe that here. God's law is not done away with. And if somebody shows me, if a leadership shows me that clearly enough, I can't follow that. Won't go there. Because the leadership is under a higher accountability, not a lower accountability. Some think, and they'll give the excuse, because Solomon was able to do this, David was able to do this. No, nope. Just because there's some kind of punishment that was not immediately exacted, David got plenty of it, so did Solomon. When you've got that many wives, it's not going to be happy camper time. It's hard enough taking care of one, isn't it? And giving that person the love that they need. I wonder about 10, 7, 6, 5, really? What was God's intent from the beginning? People reason with that all day. Oh, look, God agrees with you, you can have all these wives. You didn't read your Bible from beginning to end because the testimonies tell you, not a good idea. Always bad news when they had more than one. Never the loving, strong bond of a relationship between husband and wife that was meant from the very beginning. That's part of the law in the testimonies. That's what it says. Jesus addressed the principle of the law. Did he come to do away, negate, or take away from the law? Did he say that it was acceptable to kill somebody as long as you had a good attitude? Did you ever think about that? Did you ever think about, and you watch the news and you get plenty angry enough, and you go, boy, if I could just take that person out, just take him out. I've got a good attitude about this, God, but if I take him out, imagine all the lives that I'll save and all the people that won't be under this burden anymore. Oh, no, there'll be one to fit and take his place. You won't be able to kill enough of them. They just keep on coming. As long as Satan walks this earth, one will replace. The spirit of the law does not say that it's acceptable to break the law as long as your heart is right. So Jesus took the law and said, what's the point that God is trying to get across? That's the concept of a Christian. What is God trying to say to us here? Is it acceptable to God to pick up a rock, cock your arm back, and stop just short of taking somebody's arm off? Why, I oughta, and then you stop. Is that acceptable? Or does that go back to the principle that says, don't even start that? You're under judgment. He does not want us to bear hatred and animosity. Are we in compliance or obedience to God's law if we just stop short of the act of adultery? No, God's intent in the commandment was for mankind to not have something called lust. Huge difference between lust and love. And as you know, you grow in it, don't you? I heard that before, and I believe it. Because at 30 years of marriage, I think we've got a couple here that's in their anniversary week this week. I can't remember what day it is, but I imagine if you ask them, there's still a growth process that takes place. And then you ask somebody that's older than them. We've got some doozies here. I just remember it was seared into my head when my grandmother told me, you don't know what love is until you've been married for 50 years. I understood what she said, and they had years after that too, that it doesn't stop at 50. You know, you're kind of going, how do you keep growing in love at 50? And you just keep learning. You keep learning. You go through more experiences and different things together. You face different things together. And there's still challenges, and there's still growth. Life is exciting in that part. But if we learn the practical applications, then we're learning the lessons, and we're going to be in a better spot to teach in the kingdom. Is the point on swearing just to get the wording exactly right? No, the point is just simply to tell the truth. We shouldn't have to swear, period. Because if we always tell the truth, then we don't have to make some special exception. Like, let me be honest with you. or I swear on a stack of Bibles, or I swear on my mother's grave. These statements are saying, I'm really telling the truth this time. If somebody simply just tells the truth, there doesn't have to simply be some big production. What's the value of the oath of a liar? When I see some get up there and tell the lies that they do, go, why did he raise, what's it mean for them to raise their hand and somebody to swear the oath in? It means nothing to them. They've already justified the lie, and it becomes a part of their character because they see something in the future that they want and they'll do anything to get it. When Jesus magnified the law, he was saying that the point of the law is to be truthful. He did not take away from the law, but he made it actually more binding. When he said that our righteousness was to exceed that of the Pharisees, he was addressing our attitude toward the observance of the law. It's not that we have to observe the Sabbath day more strictly or more scrupulously. But when you look at the intent of the Sabbath, we should ask ourselves, as we've done before, should I do this? What can I do? What can I do to make the Sabbath a wonderful day today? And then you go through and hear different examples from people that have done different things. How about putting on some nice music, going out in the back porch in the morning, go for a nice walk? What can I do this morning instead of waiting to the very last minute? Oh, I don't know what I'm going to wear. I got to get this. So now it becomes hurry, hurry, hurry. On the Sabbath day, you're going to hurry too? We don't have enough time on the Sabbath to get ready? Oh, because I got to do this and I got to go there. Then I got to do this and we got to hurry. We got to get there. I'm going, no, we don't have the intent and practical application down yet. It's going to take more preparation. We've heard of Friday being the preparation day. I think we still look at it that way. And it's very technically difficult sometimes to get those in, especially for a family where both spouses work. And you come home and it's late. Wow, that really takes some planning. I remember the good old days. Well, part of it was Dad wasn't in the church. So the car was spick and span. He'd always wash the car for Mom. So we drove the car spotless. It'd be tanked up and filled. So we had a little edge there, I have to say. Then we leave and he cleaned the house. So there was a little bit of value there in that sense. Dad had to, we'll have to wait 1,000 years. Well, that cleaning, Dad, shouldn't have been done. But, there's still the application of the practical preparation. We do that as we face the Feast of Tabernacles. God has us do some things. We save. Things are being done for us to get there safely in preparation. So to go beyond the righteousness of the Pharisees had to do with our attitude and with our heart. The Jews went through the motions of obedience to the law, but their heart wasn't where it should have been. I noticed that back in Jerusalem when I saw people before the Wailing Wall and giving their bows before the wall. They kind of looked to the side to see if anybody was watching as they went through their motions. Not much has changed today. And it bears over and can bear over into the life of a Christian if we're not careful as well. So our hearts and attitudes should be looking to see the point of the law on what God's trying to say, that we go beyond just compliance to the law, that we seek to learn the motivation, the intent, and the positive value that God is communicating to us. I'll just finish with one scripture. God said, blessed are those that hunger and thirst after what? After righteousness. David said, when you put all the pieces together, believe it's Psalm 119, verse 172, all God's commandments are righteousness. It's living by God's law, which is, he's called it a law of love. Paul said, Romans 13, verse 10, love is the fulfilling of the law. Why don't people understand that? It's not given to them to understand. If there is a spiritual intent, which there is, then there's got to be a spirit to open up their mind to understand that. The world is not getting there. It's going the opposite way. See, why they're going the opposite way and people are fending off for themselves now, they're going, if they're not protecting me, I'm going to protect my back. You come here, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to do this. Violation to even man's law besides God's law. It's going the opposite way. When Satan is up there to stir it up, we're going to see it get worse. My point today is, be careful of that. We can't become Pharisaical to that point of that strict observance to where it becomes we don't understand the spiritual intent behind it, that it should bring a peace and a love and a joy and all those fruits of the Spirit. But we also have to have the heart to love God so much that we do hunger and thirst. So our minds have to be looking not just to read God's word. See, as I brought up before, the king wrote down the book of the law, and you could write it down, but it means nothing if you're not praying to understand the spiritual intent and application. We're going to have another opportunity pretty soon to go to a Feast of Tabernacles where you're going to hear a bunch of speakers. It's kind of a treat for me in a way because I've got to speak every week. Now I get a time where I speak once and I get to listen to all the other guys during the week. And you know what I do? I evaluate. I listen to what they're saying. I watch how they're saying it. And sometimes I'll pull out good points and I'll go this, and other times I'll go, I don't think I'd do that. And you're evaluating. You're watching. But for the ones that would come up, and be very careful about this. So if someone comes up to, yeah, I didn't get anything from that. I just didn't get anything from that today. Really? Why not? Well, did you pray about it? Nah, I probably should have done that, shouldn't I? Yeah. Because you got to ask for that. Because in most cases, I'll find, if somebody didn't get something from that, I'll go to talk to somebody else. They'll go, was that not great? No, I would go take the nod out. Was that great? That was a wonderful sermon. And I hear that, a difference of opinion on everybody. But the question is, did you pray about that? Did you ask God? Don't we do that at the beginning? I know I care the prayer people. I'm glad that they do. I'll go, oh, thank you, God, because I sure do it. Please inspire. They'll say in many cases, we've heard it for years, please, please bless the speaking and the hearing. So whatever's said, there might be something in there in that message that maybe a lot of stuff might not rate, but there might be one in there that might change your life so much from one thing that was said. Why do I still remember from years ago back in the 70s that one sermonette? That one sermonette, and the man's not in the church anymore. And he spoke on euphemisms. And I was doing that. Remember coming into the church and the small things that you change along the way. Okay, you can't curse. That's gone by the wayside. Oh, look at that. You got to change the way you eat that. We don't eat that stuff anymore. Boom, boom, boom. All along the way, you're learning and growing. And then you keep figuring out it doesn't stop. Because now we're just going beyond physical compliance. I'm putting that stuff out. But now God is concerned, not just that I don't curse, but it's not just waiting to belt out. You might just say, well, I didn't swear. Oh, yeah, but it's right there waiting to come out. You're just having to hold it back. You've got to change your entire mindset. I feel sorry for that person because they don't see what they're doing. Testimony. I sought Jesus Christ. Forgive them, for they don't know what they do. And I thought about that. Give me a break. They knew that they were throwing stones. They knew that they were tearing flesh from them. And yet he says, forgive them, for they don't know what they do. They were insane, and they still are. This whole world is insane. They don't know what they do. And it's going to take you and I to give them not just the laws, but the spiritual intent and the application. And we're learning that now. You may know God's laws, but you're never going to stop, no matter how old you are, in grasping the spiritual intent and application. So it's something that we can be praying about all the time. Help me as I read to understand this and grasp it. And thank you for allowing me to be a part of your plan, because I know we'll be taught this. What I'll be taught going through in the Feast of Tabernacles is what we'll be doing in the future. Those that live over in the millennium will be the teachers. That will be, yes, you and I, and those that continue on to understand the spiritual intent. But let's have the hunger and thirst to go after God's law so we can be good teachers in the world to come.